something akin to a nun.
Are you a nurse?
I used to be. Yes,
not a nun.
Yes, I have, and I enjoyed it very much at the time. Over the time I was working as a nurse, there was a huge development. You know, about 2000, it's been discussed already on air. That occurred because it needed to. Nurses do need to have, as the man who rang in with complaining that his wife and daughter didn't need training in biology, they will find when they're practicing nurses and responsible, because it's a very responsible job, they will need all of that knowledge and more. If this hadn't been necessary, it wouldn't have happened. And just to illustrate how important nurse education is, there is an increasing number of nurses who have master's degrees and some have PhDs. That might be news to some people. And also an increasing number of them are independent prescribers within their own area of expertise.
Absolutely. Now, given that that is the case, and it's obviously a very important point that you are, you are making, that is how things are.
Yes.
Quick comment from you on what you make of the Care Quality Commission's findings, which have caused such distress.
Yes, and I think that the medical practitioner who spoke before has the right approach. There is clearly a problem, and it's multifactorial. It's not because people working as nurses and healthcare assistants are deficient in their humanity. That's what made them do that work in the first place. It's because the conditions under which they are working are impossible.
Impossible.
The level of staff per patient is often far too low, and expectations of people can sometimes not be met simply because staff are stressed. When people are stressed, they lose finer feelings. It happens
Christina.
To all of us. It's a human response, isn't it? It's incredibly difficult to work, and
Christina.
It's a huge amount of stress. Yep.
Important point. I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for all your calls, emails. Next week, Danny Finkelstein, Sarah Tether, Emily Thornbury, Deborah Mattinson. And that's from Torquay. Thanks, as I say, for your emails and your calls. And good afternoon.
Any Answers was presented by Jonathan Dimbleby and was produced by Lisa Jenkinson. Now on Radio 4, the classic Chandler series continues. Toby Stevens plays the fast-talking, trouble-seeking Californian private eye in The Little Sister, dramatised by Stephen Wyatt.
I've been stalking this blue bottle fly for 5 minutes, waiting for him to sit down. He doesn't want to sit down. He just wants to do wingovers and sing the prologue to Paiachi. I have the fly swatter poised in midair, and I'm all set. The buzzing stops. And there he is.
Hold the line a moment, please.
I take a deep breath and swing. What's left of the fly sails halfway across the room and drops to the carpet.
Hello?
Thanks for waiting.
Is this Mr. Marlowe, the detective?
Yeah, it is.
How much do you charge for your services, Mr. Marlowe?
What does he want done?
Well, I can't very well tell you over the phone. It's very confidential. Before I'd waste time coming to your office, I'd have...
$40 a day in expenses. Unless it's the kind of job that can be done for a flat fee.
Oh, that's far too much. Why, it might cost hundreds of dollars, and I only get a small salary.
Where are you now?
I'm in a drugstore. It's right next to the building where your office is.
Come on up, and let's have a look at you. If you're in my kind of trouble, I can give you a pretty good idea how much it'll be.
But I need to know before...
Hey, your choice. Come in.
That's no way to talk to people over the telephone. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I'm just too proud to show it.
She's a small, neat, rather prissy-looking girl with rimless glasses. Over her shoulder hangs one of those awkward-looking square bags that make you think of a Sister of Mercy taking first aid to the wounded.
If I talked to one of Dr. Zugsmith's patients like that, I'd lose my position.
Why don't you forget about Dr. Zugsmith and take a seat? Or go away, if you prefer.
You're so rude.
Should we get down to business? You don't look like the type that goes to see private detectives, and especially private detectives you don't know.
I know that. And Orin would be absolutely livid. Mother would be furious, too. I just picked your name out of the phone book.
What's your name?
Orpha Mae Quest. I live with my mother in Manhattan. Manhattan, Kansas, you know, not Manhattan, New York. My father's dead.
And Orin?
He's my brother. We've always been regular churchgoers and godly folk. A year ago, Orin came out here to work for the Cal Western Aircraft Company in Bay City. He didn't have to. He had a good job in Wichita. I guess he just sort of wanted to come out here to California. It wasn't like Orin not to write to us regularly. But he only wrote twice to Mother and three times to me in the last 6 months. And the last letter was several months ago. Mother and I got worried. So it was my vacation, and I came out to see him. He's never been away from Kansas before. Aren't you going to take any notes? I thought the detectives always wrote down things in little notebooks.
I'll make the gags. You tell a story.
I'd written to Orin that I was coming, but I didn't get any answer. So all I could do was go down to where he lived. It's in Bay City, number 449 Idaho Street.
All I know about Bay City is that every time I go there, I have to buy a new head. You want me to finish your story for you?
What?
He's moved, and you don't know where he's moved to. And you're afraid he's living a life of sin in a penthouse on top of the Regency Towers with something in a long mink coat and an interesting perfume.
Well, for goodness sake!
Or am I being coarse?
Please, Mr. Marlowe, I don't think anything of the sort about Orin. But I know something's happened. It was just a cheap rooming house, and I didn't like the manager. He said Orin had moved away a couple of weeks before, and he didn't know where to, and he didn't care, and all he wanted was a good slug of gin.
Did you say slug of gin?
That's what the manager said. I'm just telling you.
All right. Go on.
Well, I called the place where he worked, and they said he'd been laid off, like a lot of others, and that was all they knew. So then I went to the post office and asked if Orin had put in a change of address to anywhere, but he hadn't. So then I began to get a little frightened. He might have had an accident or something.
Did it occur to you to ask the police about that?
I wouldn't dare ask the police.
Just what do you think might have happened?
I guess if I knew that, I wouldn't have come to see you. How much would you charge to find him?
You mean alone? Without telling anybody?
Yes.
I told you what my rates were.
I couldn't possibly afford more than $20. I've got to buy meals here, and the train going back, and the hotel is so terribly expensive.
Which one are you staying at?
I'd rather not tell you, if you don't mind.
Why?
I'd just rather not. I'm terribly afraid of Orin's temper.
So how come he got so bad-tempered? Is it something to do with the family and all that church going?
I don't like you. I don't think I'm going to employ you.
So there's something wrong with your family, and somebody in it has to be the dark meat.
If you're insinuating that Orin has done something wrong, well, I can assure you that it's not Orin who's the black sheep of the family.
So who is? You?
My older sister, Leela, if you must know. But I don't want to talk about her. Here's some snapshots of Orin.
He's sort of bony.
He's over 6 foot, but he only weighs about 140 pounds.
Does Orin have any distinguishing marks on him, like moles or scars or a tattoo of the 23rd Psalm on his chest? And don't bother to blush.
Well, really? No, he hasn't.
So what does he do for fun, besides not smoking or drinking or going out with girls?
What? How did you know that?
Your mother told me.
Don't be silly. Orin studies a lot. And he has a very expensive camera he likes to snap people with when they don't know. Sometimes it makes them mad, but Orin says that people ought to see themselves as they really are.
All right, I'll go down there and take a look. But you ought to be able to guess what's happened. A small town sanctimonious type of guy who's lived his entire life with his mother on his neck and the minister holding his hand. Out here he's lonely. He's got dough. The guy's going on 29 years old, and if he wants to roll in the gutter, that's his business.
Oh, I'd hate to believe you, Mr. Marlowe. I'd hate for Mother to think that something...
Something was said about $20.
Do I have to pay you now?
What would be the custom in Manhattan, Kansas?
We don't have any private detectives in Manhattan.
She counts out the notes very slowly, very sadly, as if she was drowning a favorite kitten.
There.
I can give you a receipt.
I don't need a receipt.
I do.
You won't give me your name and address, so I want something with your name on.
What for?
To show I'm representing you.
Reluctantly, she signs.
I hope Mother won't think I've done wrong. Coming here, I mean.
Please don't tell me any more things your mother won't like.
Well, really?
And stop saying, well, really.
I think you are a very offensive person.
No, you don't. You think I'm cute. And I think you're a fascinating little liar. You don't think I'm doing this for any 20 bucks, do you?
Then why? Because spring is in the air?
I didn't have the heart to tell her I was just plain bored with doing nothing. Perhaps it was the spring, too. And something in her eyes that was much older than Manhattan, Kansas. You could know Bay City a long time without knowing Idaho Street, and you could know a lot of Idaho Street without knowing number 449. I pushed the bell. It rang somewhere nearby, but nothing happened. I rang it again. The same nothing happened. I prowled along to a door with a metal sign on it. Manager, Lester B. Clausen. I knocked on that. Then I kicked it. Nobody seemed to mind my kicking the door in. It isn't much of a reception room. A high oak desk stands against the wall. Near there's a studio couch, and on it lies a man. His mouth is open, and he breathes like an old Ford with a leaky head gasket. On a table by him is a plate full of cigarette stubs, some of which had a homemade look. On the floor, a half-empty gin bottle. The room smells, mostly full of gin and bad air. There's also a reminiscence of marijuana smoke. I go over to the desk. Inside is the house register. I leaf back until I find the name Aaron P. Quest and the number 214 added in pencil. I follow on through to the end, but there's no new registration for room 214. A party called G.W. Hicks has room 215.
Mr. Clausen, I'm looking for a man named Aaron P. Quest. Aaron P. Quest?
Moved away.
Moved away? When?
I need a drink.
All I want is the present address of Aaron P. Quest.
Just think of that.
Here's my business card. Might help you to concentrate.
Is that a fact?
Hey.
That's for your business card. Beat it.
Now, just a moment.
I've got friends, couple of boys to take care of you. Don't believe me, huh?
He drags himself to his feet and claws the receiver off the hook. I watch him dial. 13572.
Son of a... let me talk to the doc. Vince! The dog!
Not getting what he wants, he throws the receiver away from him. The effort seems to exhaust him. I refill his glass of gin. He drinks it with an airy flourish, lies down on the couch, and goes to sleep instantly. There's a passkey in his pocket. Before I go upstairs, I write Doc Vince... 13572 on an envelope. Maybe it's a clue. The much-filed passkey turns the lock of room 214 without noise. I push the door open.
You can always try knocking.
The room is not empty.
I beg your pardon, the manager told me the room was vacant.
A chunky, strong-built man is bending over a suitcase on the bed. He's as bald as a grapefruit. Then, his hands come up from the pillow, go to his head, and down again. Now he has hair.
You can have this room in half an hour. I'm packing up.
Mind if I look around?
You'll make me laugh. You don't look at rooms in this town. You grab them sight unseen. This burg's so jam-packed now that I could get 10 bucks just for telling there's a vacancy here.
That's too bad.
A man called R.M.P. Quest told me about the room, so there's one sawbuck you don't get to spend.
Oh, that's so. You don't get tough with me. I'm a bad man to get tough with.
What happens to people who get tough with you? You make them hold your toupee?
You lay off my toupee.
So sorry.
There's no vacancy sign in the house. What makes you come here and find one?
You didn't catch the name? R.N.P. Quest.
Friend of yours?
We grew up together.
Yeah, this Quest party's been out of here 10 days. So he still thinks the room was vacant, huh?
According to the register, it is vacant.
I've been kind of dreamy all morning, or I'd have wised up. You're a dick.
All right. Say I'm a dick.
Yeah, what's the beef?
No beef at all. I just wondered why you had the room.
I moved from 215 across the hall. This is a better room. That's all. Simple. Satisfied?
Perfectly, Mr. Hicks.
How come you...
George W. Hicks. It's in the register. Room 215. My name's Marlowe. Philip Marlowe.
You know something? You're a goddamn liar. What's your connection with R.M.P. Quest?
I have to find him. And I think you know where he went.
He could
have
went somewhere without telling me.
Your grammar's almost as loose as your toupee.
Quit talking about my toupee.
I wasn't gonna eat it. I'm not that hungry.
Okay. I'm a careful guy myself. That's why I'm moving out.
Why? Don't you like the reefer smoke?
That and other things. That's why Quest left. Respectable type. Like me. I think a couple of the hard boys threw a scare into him.
So, no forwarding address. Well, thanks, Mr. Hicks. Going far?
Not very far. Just far enough.
What's your racket?
Racket?
Sure. What are you shaking for? How do you make your dibs?
You got me wrong, brother. I'm a retired optometrist.
Uh-huh. So that wouldn't be a 45 gun in your luggage.
What of it? It's been in the family for years.
Okay, Mr. Hicks. Thanks for your time. I go over to room 215 and use the pass key to enter. There's signs of occupancy, but nothing I could connect to R.M.P. Quest. I shut the door and wait. Not more than 2 minutes pass before Mr. George W. Hicks is on his way. I open the door of room 215 again and listen. He goes downstairs into the manager's apartment. I wait for the sound of voices. No voices. I make another pilgrimage into room 214. I search the room with care and patience and find nothing that connects it with R.N.P. Quest either. I didn't expect to, so I go downstairs. Mr. Lester B. Clausen lies on a couch with his face to the wall, dead to the world. I go to the desk. The page with R.N. Quest's registration has been torn out. A careful man, Mr. Hicks. Very careful. Then I notice something. A drunk like Clausen ought to be snoring his head off, but he isn't making any sound at all. I stand over him and look down. A brown army blanket is pulled up around his shoulders and the lower part of his head. I move it away. A square yellow wooden handle is attached to the back of the manager's neck. Its position is just below the occipital bulge. It's the handle of an ice pick. Time to leave. But before I leave the neighborhood, I have a duty to perform.
Bay City Police.
Number 449 Idaho Street, in the apartment of the manager. His name's Clausen.
Yeah? What do we do?
I don't know. It's a bit of a puzzle to me. But the man's name is Lester B. Clausen. Got that?
What makes it important?
The coroner will want to know. Back at the office, it takes me a quarter hour to find out the party who went with the phone number 13572 in Bay City. A Dr. Vincent Lagardi. It takes me longer to get through to him. He's busy. What doctor isn't?
Who is this speaking?
The name is Hicks. George W. Hicks.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Hicks, but I don't know this Mr. Clausen, and I have an excellent memory for names.
Well, that's all right, then.
Just wanted to make sure. Somebody stuck an ice pick in the back of his neck.
Has this been reported to the police?
Naturally. But it shouldn't bother you, unless, of course, it was your ice pick. He tried to phone you this morning. He was too drunk to talk properly.
But I don't know him.
Well, that's fine. And you won't meet him now. But somebody may want to know why he tried to telephone you. Unless I forget to pass the information on.
I can't think of any comment to make on that.
Huh. Neither can I. But I may need to call you again. I'm a mixed-up little man, and I may have need of a doctor.
Well, then, please feel free to consult me.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
If Dr. Vincent Ligardi is on the level, he'll now telephone the Bay City Police Department and tell him the story. If he doesn't, he isn't on the level, which may or may not be useful to know. Next morning, early, Orpha May arrives at the office. She wants to know if I found Oren. I tell her what I've done. She's not impressed.
I paid you $20. I understood that was in payment of a day's work. It doesn't seem to me you've done a day's work.
You can have your $20 back if you like. I didn't even bruise it.
I didn't mean it like that. I know you're doing what you can, Mr. Marlowe.
With the facts I have.
But I've told you everything I know.
I don't think so.
I can't help what you think.
Okay, so I'll tell you what's wrong. I'll skip over that you're not telling me where you're staying, because it might just be that you're afraid I'll show up with a quart of hooch under my arm and make a pass at you.
That's not a very nice way to talk.
Nothing I say is nice. I'm not nice. What's wrong with the situation is that you're not scared. Neither you personally nor your mother. And you ought to be as scared as hell.
Do you mean that something has happened to Oren?
I don't know that anything has. But in you and your mother's position, knowing the kind of guy Oren was, the way his letters came through and then didn't, I can't see myself waiting for my summer vacation to come around before I started asking questions. I can't see myself bypassing the police, who have an organization for finding people, for a lone wolf operator you never heard of.
Don't you dare say Mother and I weren't worried. Just don't you dare.
You were worried $20 worth, honey. But about what, I wouldn't know. So just put this hunk of the folding back in your saddlebag and forget you ever met me.
Nobody in the world's ever talked to me the way you have.
Don't think about it too much. You might get to like it.
There's that look again. Without her cheetahs on, those eyes would be really something. And she knows that's what I'm thinking.
I'm sorry I was mean. I know you're doing what you can. I'll call you. Goodbye.
Let me know when you want to tell me more.
I will.
All this for $20.
Yep.
You Marlowe?
Speaking.
You got a safe deposit box, Marlowe? I asked you a question, Marlowe.
If you have a proposition, state it, and I get called Mister until you give me some money.
I need something kept in a safe place. For a few days. No longer. For that, you make a little quick money.
How little? And how quick?
C-note. Right here and waiting. I'm warming it for you.
Right where I'm waiting?
Room 332, Van Nuys Hotel. Knock two quick ones and two slow ones. Not too loud.
What does he want me to keep?
That can wait till you get here. I'm in a hurry.
What's your name?
Just room 332.
The hotel has a safe.
You want to die poor, Marlowe?
Why not? Goodbye.
How's every little thing in Bay City? I thought that might interest you. Room 332 it is. Tramp on it, friend. Make speed.
It takes me 25 minutes to get to the Van Nuys Hotel. The porter tells me that the occupant is a Dr. G.W. Hambleton. The initials sound familiar. I feel as if I've spent my whole life knocking on doors in cheap hotels that nobody bothers to open. I try the knob. The door opens, and I walk in.
Dr. Hambleton?
A man lies on the bed. He doesn't answer. Then the bathroom door opens and a woman comes out. A towel in front of the lower part of her face. Dark glasses above the towel. A wide-brimmed straw hat over her head. This woman does not want to be recognized. Oh, and she's also wearing gauntleted gloves. And there's an automatic in her right hand. White bone grip. Looks like a .32.
Turn around and put your hands behind you.
No, just a minute.
Don't ever think I'm fooling. I'll give you exactly 3 seconds to do what I say.
Could you make it a minute? I like looking at you.
Turn around, but fast.
I like the sound of your voice, too.
Turn!
All right. But don't forget you're a lady.
However many times somebody knocks you unconscious, the experience never gets any more enjoyable. When I come to, she's gone. But there are signs that she's been searching for something in the bathroom. All over the room, in fact. I go over to the man on the bed. He hasn't moved during all this time for a somewhat obvious reason. There's no blood. None at all. Which is one of the few nice things about an expert ice pick job. The point of interest now is whether the people who had ice picked Dr. Hambleton, otherwise known as George W. Hicks, had found what they came for. They hadn't had much time. If the killers knew what they were looking for, it had to be something that could be hidden in a book. A telephone box, a tube of toothpaste, or a hatband. My head is still aching, but I search the bathroom carefully. I move the top of the toilet seat and drain it. Then I search the bureau. It's empty except for an old envelope. I'm examining the backs of one of the pictures when I have an idea so simple I suddenly grin. I pull off Dr. Hambleton's toupee and turn it inside out. A piece of orange-colored paper is fastened by scotch tape to the lining. It's a numbered claim check belonging to the Bay City Camera Shop.
Yes, Mr. Hicks, we have them for you. 6 in large prints on glossy from your negative.
What time do you close?
Oh, in about 5 minutes. We open at 9 in the morning.
I'll pick them up in the morning. Thanks.
Soon I'd have to phone the cops. Tipping them off about dead bodies is getting monotonous, but I have to do it. First, though, I talk to the porter. Thank God for Hollywood. He has this crazy idea that the dame who left the hotel just before me looks like some movie star he's nuts about. He's got the registration number of her car. He gives the registration to me for considerably more money than Orpha Mae Quest ever gave me. But I have to know what's going on. Once you have the registration, it's not hard to find a name. And even when the name's the name of an up-and-coming movie star called Mavis Weld, there are people who can get you her address and phone number for a price. It's a Crestview phone number. If you don't have a Crestview phone number in Hollywood, you're a bum. Miss Weld's apartment doesn't look expensive, except that every place is expensive here. You can smell money in the air.
Yes?
Miss Weld, please.
And who is calling Miss Weld, please?
I have some stills Whitey wants me to deliver tonight.
And who is Whitey, amigo?
The head stills photographer at the studio. Don't you know that much?
Aren't we tough? I'll come down and let you in. Miss Weld is taking a bath. She's not in the best of moods, but I'm sure she's dying to see these photos.
Are you staying around too?
Of course. Why ask?
Well, what have you got for us, handsome?
Some stills.
So you say.
She looks down sharply at my empty hands.
Are you quite sure you have the stills, amigo?
She's a tall, dark girl in jodhpurs. Sexy is very faint praise for her. Even I recognize her.
Well?
Your last picture was wonderful, Miss Gonzalez.
But it was stinking. Positively goddamn stinking. You sweet, lovely man.
Nothing with you and it stinks for me, Miss Gonzalez.
Come up and have a drink. I adore flattery, however dishonest.
So here I am, having drinks with Dolores Gonzalez, the Mexican Spitfire, in an apartment with paintings on the walls that look lousy enough to have cost a lot of money.
Here.
Thanks.
You may call me Dolores, if you wish. And you are...
Let's just say Philip.
I am most fully aware that you are a goddamn liar, and that you have no stills in your pockets. Not that I wish to inquire into your, no doubt, very private business.
Yeah? Just what kind of bath is Miss Weld taking? An old-fashioned soap or something with Arabian spices in it?
Perhaps you would like to help her.
No thanks, Miss Gonzalez. I'm strictly here on business.
What a waste. All my friends tell me I am far too outspoken. I do shock you, don't I?
No. But if I wanted to be shocked, I'd know right where to come.
Then I better give you my address. I live at the Chateau Bercy. And I'm often lonely.
Dolores, I thought I asked you to get rid of whoever was at the door.
I just couldn't resist letting him in.
Well, if you want to get better acquainted, go do it someplace else. I don't want him here.
His name's Philip.
I didn't know you usually bothered to ask them their names. You seldom know them long enough.
Such a charming way to call a girl a whore, isn't it, Philip? At least I haven't been sleeping with any gunmen recently.
Are you sure you can remember? Open the door, honey. This is the day we put the garbage out.
The Gonzalez looks back at her slowly, levelly, and with a knife in her eyes.
Buenas noches.
Now suppose you do the same, but more quietly.
I'm here on business, Miss Weld.
Out. I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. Do I have to call the manager to bounce you downstairs like a basketball?
You still have your little gun with a white bone grip? My head's still aching from that knock you gave me.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about.
So what do you want from me? Money?
Money always helps.
I'm sure it does.
I never thought you killed Hicks. But it would help to have some sort of reason for not telling you were there.
My goodness. Am I supposed to have killed somebody? How silly of me to have forgotten.
Look, you're gonna find this hard to believe, but I came here with a quaint idea that you might be a girl who needed some help.
I trust you have your car fare home. I'm not giving you a cent.
Listen, I figured you went to that hotel room to make some kind of payoff. And the fact that you went by yourself and took chances on being recognized and were recognized makes me think you're in one of those Hollywood jams that really means curtains for your career.
Will you shut up?
Okay. You don't need me. You're so goddamn smart you could talk your way out of a safe deposit box. Go ahead and talk your way out of whatever mess you're in.
Will you go now, you slimy, blackmailing, keyhole peeper?
I'm beginning to think you write your own dialogue. I've been wondering just what was the matter with it.
You know where the door is.
She doesn't move or breathe as I reach the door. Just stares at me. Her eyes remind me of someone. That sets me thinking. Outside, I almost bump into a slim, dark-eyed man who's standing there lighting a cigarette.
Excuse me. I am afraid I'm in your way.
He has a key in his other hand.
Not at all. You don't need that key. The door isn't locked.
Of course. How stupid of me.
Yeah, we're both stupid. Anybody's stupid that bothers with that tramp.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
You don't have to. I've said it for you.
Thank you. By the way, I hope I'm not interrupting an interesting quarrel. I would hate to do that. And since Miss Weld is a friend in common, may I introduce myself? My name is Steelgrave. Haven't I seen you somewhere?
No, I don't believe you have. My name's Marlowe. Philip Marlowe.
I'll remember that. Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
I look back. He's still standing there watching me, the cigarette between his lips, very calm, his face giving nothing away. But I somehow sense it might have been better for me if I had known who Mr. Steelgrave was and hadn't been quite so brutal. Another day at the office. Another early visit from Miss Orpha Mae Quest.
The office isn't open yet.
But it's terribly important. I've heard from Oren.
Fine. Then you don't need a detective.
Very well, but I don't think you'll like it. I don't think you'll like it at all. I'm ready to call the police now.
Why is that?
because there's murder in it, Mr. Marlowe? And murder is a very nasty word, don't you think?
Anybody I know?
That horrid man in the rooming house was murdered. I read it in the papers. Mr. I forget his name.
Let's both forget it. And please, take your money away. Endow a hospital or a research laboratory with it. It makes me nervous having it around.
But I need you to find Orin for me.
But I thought you said...
It was all a lie. He didn't call me up. I don't know anything.
Okay. I'll find him for you, honey, if he's still alive. And for free.
Oh.
Just one thing.
What?
Who was the black sheep in your family? You said it wasn't Orin, remember? But then you mentioned your sister, Leela, and passed on quickly as if the subject was distasteful.
I don't remember.
So I was wondering, what name does your sister, Leela, use in pictures?
Pictures? Oh, you mean motion pictures? I never said anything about her like that.
You want me to tell you her name and where she lives?
You mind your business about my sister, Leela. You leave her out of your dirty remarks.
What dirty remarks? Or should I try and guess?
Oh, I hate you. Goodbye.
Well, it got rid of her, and it confirms my hunch about Mavis being her sister. Not many women have eyes as striking as this pair. All in all, not a bad result. Later, I drive to the Bay City camera shop. I proffer the claim check retrieved from the late Mr. Hicks's toupee. Then I drive a couple of blocks and look over the catch. The prints show a man and a blonde girl sitting in a crowded restaurant with food in front of them. They're looking up as though their attention has suddenly been attracted and they only just have time to react before the camera clicks. The restaurant is the Dancers on Sunset Boulevard. The girl is Miss Mavis Weld. The man is Mr. Steelgrave. And the photographer, I would guess, is Mr. R.M.P. Quest. Whether he had his sister's consent or not, I can't tell from the photo. Then I notice something else. An evening paper, the News Chronicle, is lying on the table in front of Mr. Steelgrave. I've brought along a magnifying glass, and now I use it. I can make out the headline. It reads, "Light heavyweight contender succumbs to ring injuries." And I know I have to talk to my good friend Todd Barrow, former reporter on the aforesaid News Chronicle.
Okay, I checked just in case my memory got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Richie Bello was a popular young light heavyweight. He died just before midnight on the 19th of February as a result of ring injuries sustained the previous evening in the main event at the Hollywood Legion Stadium. So, it was the News Chronicle noon sports edition for February 20th, which carried the headline.
I knew I could rely on you, Todd.
So what else you want to know?
Anything else interesting in the news that day?
Boy, was there another big story. Bigger than the Richie Bello, if we'd known.
So, tell me.
Did you ever hear of Sonny Moe Stein?
Yeah, he was a big-time gangster.
Big-time is the word. The night in question, he was gunned down over on Franklin Avenue. Which was sort of ironic, as he was a man whose gang specialized in the use of ice picks.
You're interesting me. Any suspects?
A guy called Weepy Moya. Used to be next in command to Stein in the organization when they started out in Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio?
It was always a gangster town.
So Moyer killed Stein?
It might have been done in his orders, only he couldn't have done it personally.
Why not?
Because he was in jail on a gambling rap. Well, the man police suspected of being Moyer, that is. They never managed to prove whether he was Moyer or not. I don't think they tried too hard. The police like this guy because he's a gentleman. He has nice manners, and he keeps things sweet.
And of course he had a cast iron alibi for the shooting.
Well, what better one than being in a police cell?
You're talking as if this guy, who may or may not be Weepy Moyer, is still around.
He's very much still around. And he's been legitimate for some time. He owns the Dancer's Restaurant on Sunset Boulevard. And the film stars go there, and he smells of roses.
I guess he's not using the name Weepy Moyer.
What guy would stick with that name if he didn't have to? For quite some time now, he's been known as Steelgrave.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you very much. The photo is just two people having lunch on a certain day.
But it was the day Mo Stein was shot to death on Franklin Avenue. The day a character named Steelgrave was in jail, suspected of being a Cleveland red hot named Weepy Moyer. But the photo says he was out of jail on the day in question. Mavis Weld took a tremendous risk when she went to the Van Nuys Hotel. Why? A Hollywood movie studio is some kind of fortress. You better know the entry codes, or they'll pour boiling oil on your head. Somehow I managed to get a message to Miss Mavis Weld on the studio floor of her latest epic that I have some photos from a certain day in February which she might like to see. And, miracle of miracles, she graciously agrees to see me in her dressing room during her lunch hour.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, this had better be good.
Maybe graciously is the wrong word.
I have very little time. Despite what people think, making a movie is not about sitting around sipping champagne. I've been here since 5 this morning.
Believe it or not, I saw your last movie.
Oh?
I thought you were good, but you could have been better. But if you had been better, half your scenes would have been yanked to protect that aging brunette who had top billing. But then, I don't know much about movies.
You clearly know enough. Show business. There's something cheap about it. There always has been.
Here's the photo.
Well?
I have the negatives and some other prints. You would have had them if you'd had more time and known where to look. Or if Hicks had stayed alive to sell them to you.
The significance of all this escapes me.
What you mean is I know you and I know Steelgrave. So what's this photo got that makes anybody give me a diamond dog collar?
All right. What?
I'm not sure. But if finding out is what it takes to shake you out of this Duchess routine, I'll find out.
You haven't anything to sell. Except perhaps your life. You've waited too long. Far, far too long.
For me or for you?
For both of us. Give me a cigarette. How much money do you make, Marlowe?
$40 a day in expenses. That's the asking price. I've taken less.
$40 a day?
Little lonely dollars.
Are they very lonely?
Lonely as lighthouses.
Okay. Ask me the questions.
Who's Steelgrave?
A man I've known for years and liked. He owns things. A restaurant or two. Where he comes from, that I don't know.
But you know him very well.
Why don't you ask me if I sleep with him?
I don't ask that kind of question.
Oh, Miss Gonzalez would be glad to tell you.
The hell with Miss Gonzalez.
She's dark and lovely and passionate.
And exclusive as a mailbox. To hell with her. About Steelgrave. Has he ever been in trouble?
Who hasn't?
With the police?
No, don't be ridiculous. The man is worth a couple of million dollars.
How did he get it?
How would I know?
All right. You wouldn't. That cigarette's gonna burn your lovely fingers.
I lean across and take the stub out of her hand. Our hands touch.
Don't do that.
Then you don't really know anything about Steelgrave. Or what he'd been before you met him.
I wish you'd make up your mind whether you're giving me the third degree or making love to me.
My mind has nothing to do with it.
I really have to go eat something, Marlowe. I'm working this afternoon. You wouldn't want me to collapse on set, would you?
Only stars do that.
I may get top billing one day.
I think you will. I told you before, I wouldn't be here if I thought you killed anybody. But you were there in the hotel. You took a big chance. There was something you wanted very badly.
It can hardly have been this photograph.
That was the one thing he had so well hidden that it wasn't found. But you're right. Why is it so important? It's only a photo of you and a man called Steelgrave in a booth at the Dancers. Nothing in that.
Nothing at all.
Unless there's something about Steelgrave. Or there's something about the date.
The date?
Get yourself a magnifier. And look at that newspaper headline. Or show it to Steelgrave. Ask him if it means anything.
You're just building a sandcastle, Marlowe.
You really think that?
Why not?
I found something the police would love to have.
Something you were prepared to go to the Van Nuys Hotel to buy. Something that got the man you were going to meet murdered. Something that possibly links your friend Mr. Steelgrave to a gangland murder. All this is as full of motive as the ocean is full of salt.
Well, if this is as big as you seem to think it is, aren't you scared?
As long as the cops don't find the negatives, I have a license. And as long as somebody else doesn't find I have them, I won't get an ice pick in the back of my neck. Would you say I was in an overpaid profession?
I never said that. You better go, Marlowe. I have to eat. Goodbye.
All I have to do is turn the knob on the dressing room door and go on out. I don't know why it has to be so hard to do.
Take care.
I was just thinking it was high time I heard from Orphimae again. Marlowe.
This time I really mean it. I lied before. I'm not lying now. I really have heard from Orin.
Go on.
You're not believing me. I can tell by your voice.
You can't tell anything by my voice. I'm a detective. Heard from him how?
By phone, from Bay City.
We've been through this routine.
Please don't tease me. He went to the post office and asked for his mail, so he knew where I'd be staying. Then he called up. He's staying with a doctor he got to know down there, doing some kind of work for him.
Doctor have a name?
Yes, a funny name. Dr. Vincent Lagardi.
I won't say the pieces are beginning to fall into place, but at least they're getting to look like parts of the same puzzle.
Orin's in a lot of trouble. Some gangsters are after him.
Don't be silly, Orphimae. They don't have gangsters in Bay City. They're all working in pictures.
Please go down there and see him and help him. He's afraid to leave the house.
And what is Dr. Vincent Lagardi doing all this time?
Well, he doesn't know about the gangsters, of course. Please, please go at once. I have the address and the phone number here.
Ring me around 5. I'll let you know how I get on.
I study my face in the car mirror. I look as if I've made my mind up to drive off a cliff. Dr. Lagardi is busy and doesn't want to see me. But somehow the name of Arne P. Quest finally makes him see me. He's a thin, dark, haunted man. A sterilizer is working in the corner. There are a lot of needles cooking in it.
I confess I am puzzled, Mr. Marlowe. I don't know anyone named Arne Quest. I can't imagine any reason in the world why a person of that name should say he was in my house.
Hiding out?
From what?
From some guys that might want to stick an ice pick in the back of his neck. On account of he's a little too quick with his little Leica. Taking people's photographs when they want to be private and letting them know he took them. Am I talking in riddles?
You're not talking much sense. So, I suppose it must have been you who called up and reported Clausen's death to the police. And it was also you who called me up and asked me if I knew Clausen. I said I did not.
But it wasn't true. If you'd been on the level, you would have reported to the police what I told you. But you didn't.
I have better things to do with my time.
At least I never told the police you knew Clausen.
Somebody did. And caused me a great deal of inconvenience. I'm under no obligation to give you any information, Mr. Marlowe.
The front door opens and closes. We both listen to it carefully, but we don't say anything about the footsteps.
Why so many needles in the sterilizer?
Is it any of your business?
Nothing's any of my business. I'm just talking and waiting. Something's going to happen in this house. It's leering at me from the corners.
So why are you concerned about the number of needles? This is a doctor's surgery.
But not any doctor's surgery.
I've dealt with addicts. What doctor has not? It's a complete waste of time.
Sure. But I've known other doctors who've made a good living out of filling dames with drugs for their bad nerves.
I don't see where this is getting us.
Maybe I've been jumping to the wrong conclusions. Smelling that reefer smoke over at Clausen's place yesterday and having him call your number on the telephone and call you by your first name made me think you and he might be in some kind of drug deal together.
I'd say you were coming to very wrong conclusions.
If you want to play it that way. Let's both just sit here, as though we haven't got a care in the world, when both of us are probably going to be in the clink by nightfall.
What makes you think that?
You, because Clausen dealt in drugs and knew you by your first name. And you may have been the last man he talked to. Me, because I've been doing all the things a private investigator never gets away with. Hiding evidence, hiding information, finding bodies, and not coming in with my hat in my hands to those lovely, incorruptible Bay City cops.
You talk too much.
I'm trying to read your mind. You're a smart guy. So how come you're here with a cheap little practice in a cheap and nasty little town? What are you doing with people like Clausen? What was the rap, doctor? Narcotics? Abortions? Or were you by any chance a medic for the gang boys in some hot eastern city?
As for instance,
Cleveland, Ohio.
A very wild suggestion, my friend.
It goes like this, if you want to listen.
I am listening.
Clausen was killed very skillfully with an ice pick while I was upstairs talking to a grifter named Hicks. Later, Hicks was killed with an ice pick in L.A. There was a woman there who had come to buy something from him. She didn't get it. I did. Presumption A. Clausen and Hicks were killed by the same man, not necessarily for the same reason. Hicks was killed because he muscled in on another guy's racket. Clausen was killed because he was a babbling drunk and might know who would be likely to kill Hicks. Any good so far?
Not the slightest interest to me.
Oh, but you are listening. Sure good manners, I suppose. Now, what did I find? A photo of a movie queen and an ex-Cleveland gangster having lunch on a particular day. A day when this gangster was supposed to be in hock at the county jail. A day when his one-time gangster buddy was shot dead on Franklin Avenue in Los Angeles. And the man in the picture had a very good reason to want him dead. It's therefore strong blackmail material. Presumption B. Orrin Quest, the boy I'm trying to find, took that photo. How did he get a chance to take the photo? Answer. The movie queen was his sister. She let him come up and talk to her.
It begins to have possibilities. But why are you telling this rather dangerous story to me? Have a cigarette.
He reaches a cigarette out of a box and tosses it to me. I catch it and look it over. Egyptian. Oval and fat, and a little rich for my blood. But he lights up, and so do I.
Shall I tie you in now?
Oh, I'd be most interested.
Presumption C. Orrin didn't really know the value of what he got. The L.A. cops hadn't been able to establish the identity of that ex-Cleveland character. Let's call him by his new name, Steelgrave. Maybe the police didn't want to. Maybe somebody made it worth their while. Orrin may have realized he could ruin Steelgrave's alibi, but it needed somebody else who was able to identify Steelgrave as Weepy Moyer, if that photo was worth killing people over. So, tell me, did you ever practice medicine in Cleveland, Doctor?
You asked me that before.
Somebody has to mastermind this deal. Clausen was a bum, and Orrin Quest a nasty-minded creep who didn't know enough to make the blackmail stick. You did, but you couldn't go up against Steelgrave directly, particularly if you had dealings with him in the past. You wouldn't have stayed alive long enough to brush your teeth. You had to work through pawns. Expendable pawns. You...
Presumption
you,
D. Mr. Marlowe, you are an unmitigated idiot.
Wait.
My mind is slowed to a turtle's gallop.
What's going on here?
A little potassium hydrocyanide.
Wait.
Not fatal. Not even dangerous.
I...
Merely relaxing.
I have to...
I've been very dumb. I start to try to get off the floor, but somebody needs to nail the floor down first. A face swims towards me out of the darkness. I change direction and crawl towards the face. It's getting dark rapidly. There's no face. There's no wall, no desk. Then there's no floor. There's nothing at all. I'm not even there.
Yeah.
The room is just Dr. Lagardi's consulting room. Same floor, same desk, same walls. But no Dr. Lagardi.
Where?
I drag myself to my feet. Steps are coming down the hall. I wait by the closed door. Someone out there is in trouble. It's not my problem, but I take a deep breath, twist the doorknob, and open the door. He's braced to the doorframe by four hooked fingers made of white wax. Our faces are inches apart. His eyes look at me, but they don't see me. Our breathing meets in midair. Mine is quick and harsh. His is the far-off whisper which has not yet begun to rattle. Blood bubbles from his mouth and down his chin. I couldn't see where he'd been shot. He starts to fall. His torso turns in midair like a swimmer in a wave and jumps at me. I stagger back and try to hold him up. He weighs like five men. Suddenly, his other arm comes up. A bee stings me between the shoulder blades. I let go and he falls. The face of the dead man now has a vague inner amusement, an almost roguish lift at the corners of the mouth. All of which is very silly because I knew damn well, if ever I knew anything at all, that Orin P. Quest had not been that kind of boy. The bee sting between my shoulder blades reminds me to look for something else. There's a thing with a round white wooden handle on the floor. An ice pick with a filed down blade not more than 3 inches long. Something that moved and could have been a man and could have been the man who hurt him. It had worked for him before with Clausen and Hicks, so why not give it one last try? Just out of Bay City, I stop in front of the last drugstore. It's time for me to make one more of my anonymous phone calls. Come and pick up the body, fellas. Who am I? Just a lucky boy who keeps finding him for you. Modest, too. Don't even want my name mentioned. I'm far outside the law already, and my luck isn't gonna last. Then I think of Orpheme. She has a right to know first, law or no law. Marlo?
I called you up because you told me to, but you don't have to tell me anything. I went down there.
You went down there?
I borrowed a car. I wasn't following you, but I was parked on the other side of the street. I saw you come out, and you looked kind of funny. I tried to go after you, but I lost you. So I went back to the house.
Why did you do that?
I just had a bad feeling. He being my brother and all. So I went back and I rang the bell. Nobody answered. Maybe I'm psychic or something. All of a sudden, I seemed to have to get into that house.
So let me guess. You called the police.
I told them I'd heard shots. They came and one got in through the window. Then they wouldn't let me go. I had to tell them all about it, who he was, that I'd lied about the shots, but I was afraid something had happened to Orin. And I had to tell them about you, too.
That's all right. I'd have told him myself as soon as I could get a chance to tell you.
It's kind of awkward for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Will they arrest you or something?
They could.
You left him lying there on the floor, dead. You had to, I guess.
I had my reasons. They won't sound too good, but I had them. It made no difference to him.
Oh, you'd have your reasons, all right. You're very smart. You always have reasons for things. Well, I guess now you'll have to tell the police your reasons, too.
Not necessarily.
Oh, yes, you will. You certainly will. They'll make you.
In my business, a fellow does what he can to protect his client. Sometimes he goes a little too far. That's what I did. I put myself where they can hurt me. But not entirely for you.
You left him lying on the floor dead. And I don't care what they do to you. If they put you in prison, I think I should like that. I bet you'll be awfully brave about it.
Sure. Always the gallant smile. Well, I'm off to the police headquarters now. They'll be pleased to see me. Good luck if I don't see you again.
Better keep your good luck. You might need it, and I wouldn't want it.
I did my best for you.
Perhaps if you'd given me a little more information in the beginning...
She hangs up while I'm saying it, and now I have to face the cops. I drove off a cliff, all right. The cops put me in a stuffy interview room and give me a hard time. There's a loudmouthed Bay City cop who hates my guts from the start. The L.A. cops aren't fond of me either, but there's nothing they hate more than an out-of-town cop trying to throw his weight around, so that works in my favor. They tell me my client ratted on me, as if I didn't know. They also tell me Dr. Ligardi's not been found. Maybe he never will be. In the end, the cops decide to let me go. I've been given a rain check. They tell me to go and square things up, fast. As if I knew how. So now I'm back in my office with a distant cousin of the recently deceased Fly going for the prologue of Paiacci again. I can't be bothered to swat him. I feel like a page from yesterday's calendar crumpled at the bottom of the waste paper basket.
Hello.
Are you on your own?
Have you phoned to tell me you're feeling lonesome, Miss Gonzalez?
I can always use the company of a real man. I'm sad you've not taken up the invitation.
I've had other things on my mind.
Okay, amigo. I suppose I forgive you. For now. Because there is trouble. Bad trouble. She wants to see you.
Who? Mavis Weld?
Well, who else? Apart from me, of course. She's decided she likes you. She thinks you're an honest man.
Should I be flattered?
Will you come? Now. It's urgent.
Where do I go?
I will come for you. I will be before your building in 15 minutes. It is not easy to get where we go.
How is it coming back? Or don't we care?
You drive, please, amigo.
Why didn't she call me?
She couldn't. She did not have the number and she had very little time.
Why?
It seemed to be while someone was out of the room for just a moment.
And where's this place she called from?
I do not know the name of the street, but I can find the house. That is why I come. Please, get into the car and let us hurry.
Maybe. And then again, maybe I'm not getting into the car. Old age and arthritis have made me cautious.
Oh, always the wisecrack. It is a very strange man.
Always the wisecrack where possible. And it's a very ordinary man with only one head, which has been used rather harshly at times.
Will you make love to me tonight?
That's an open question. Probably not.
You would not waste your time.
Just for half an hour. Let's leave the sex to one side. Okay, where are we going?
We go west through the Beverly Hills and then further on.
So, what kind of trouble is Miss Weld in?
I do not know. She just said it was trouble, and she was much afraid, and she needed you.
You ought to be able to think of a better story than that.
I would not hurt a hair of Mavis Weld's head.
So you're not sure that her career's going up and yours isn't?
I didn't expect you'd believe me.
On the other hand, maybe the fact that you don't have a story helps.
Would you like my head on your shoulder?
Not in this traffic.
You are bitter tonight, amigo.
I got a few troubles. The only reason I'm driving this car with you beside me is that I got so much trouble that a little more will seem like icing. The cops don't like me either.
What will they do to you?
They might get me run out of town, and I couldn't care less. Don't push me too hard. I need this arm to shift gears.
Oh, I think you are very nasty to get along with. Turn right at the Los Canyon Road. He was my boyfriend too, you know.
Who are we talking about?
Mr. Steelgrave.
Did you know him before he was Mr. Steelgrave?
I don't understand.
If you say so.
Can you tell me what sort of place we're going to?
I think it's some sort of gambling house.
Private road. No trespassing. Is that it?
Yes.
It's a long, low, white house. Both the wide garage doors are closed. There's no light in the house. There's no sound. No sign of life. I stopped the car, then turned to Dolores. She's shivering.
What's the matter?
I am being very foolish. Steel Grave will kill me for this. Kiss me.
Is he in there?
Yes.
Who else?
Nobody else. Except Mavis. He will kill her too. Mavis took him away from me, but I did not want him to kill her. The world is full of other men who have enough money.
He seemed like a nice little guy when I met him.
Of course he did. That is why he is what he is. You think you are tough, amigo. You are a very soft bitch compared with Steelgrave. He has killed a dozen men with a smile for each one. I have known him for a very long time. I knew him in Cleveland. Will you kill him for me?
Would you believe me if I promised?
Yes.
I'll kill him if I have to.
That's all I can ask. Good luck, amigo.
I get out of the car. She blows a kiss, shifts into the driving seat, and drives off. I'm alone in the moonlight. I head for the house. I didn't think the door would be unlocked for my convenience, but strangely it was. Inside is a hallway. Beyond is a kitchen big enough for a dancing class. At last I come to what must be the living room. It's curtained and quite dark, but it has the feel of great size. I feel for a light switch, but in houses like this, they have a different way of doing things. No light switch.
Hello? Anybody here needing a detective?
Amber light begins to grow high up behind the cornice that circumnavigates the room. Floor lamps, soft chairs, love seats, long shrouded gaming tables in the middle of the floor space. But the joint is dead. The room is empty. Well, not quite.
Hello again yourself. I still think you came too late.
Too late for what?
She's leaning against the side of a grandfather's chair, wearing a pale cocoa fur coat. Her face would have been chalk white if it hadn't been for the lighting.
I need a drink, or maybe I'll fall down.
That's a lovely coat.
Stone Martin. $40,000. Rent it for the picture.
Is all this part of the picture?
This is the picture to end all pictures. For me. I do need that drink. If I try to walk...
Go ahead and faint. I'll cash you on the first bounce.
Thanks.
Why did I come too late? Too late for what?
Too late to be shot.
Shucks. I've been looking forward to that all evening. Miss Gonzalez brought me.
I know. She'll be disappointed as hell. She put you on the spot.
She may have started out to, but she changed her mind.
What a way you have with the girls. Oh!
I carry her over to a gold couch and spread her out on it. Then I fetch her drink. A dark and pungent brandy.
Can you hold it?
Sure. Where's yours?
I'm not drinking. My emotions are being worked on enough without that.
I can't think of any lines tonight.
It's the Technicolor dialogue. It freezes up on you.
Aren't we talking like a couple of nuts?
We could get sensible. Where's Steelgrave?
He was here. May I have a cigarette?
The old cigarette stall. Here. So, where is Steelgrave?
You ought to be glad wherever he is. He thought he had no choice but to kill you.
You wanted me here, didn't you? Were you that fond of him?
I must have been. It seems like 1,000 years ago I met a nice, quiet little man who knew how to behave in public and didn't shoot his charm around every bistro in town. Yes, I liked him. I liked him a lot. And in the end, I liked him with this.
She pulls out a white-handled automatic. It looks familiar. I sniff the muzzle. It's been fired. And recently, too.
So where is he?
Try that chair over there.
It's a high-backed wing chair, covered in flowered chintz. It's turned towards the wall. Now I turn it. He leans on the corner of the chair with his head tilted back. His eyes are half open. The bullet has gone through the outside pocket of his double-breasted jacket. It's been fired by someone who knows where the heart is.
What did you expect me to do? He killed my brother.
Your brother was no angel. He was a killer himself.
I don't care. Steelgrave didn't have to shoot him.
Somebody had to, and quick. So how long have you known the photos existed?
Weeks. Nearly 2 months. Orin called me up and said he'd lost his job. He needed money. He didn't say much about the photos he'd taken. He didn't have to. I knew I had to tell Steelgrave that the negatives existed. I didn't mention Orin's name. Then when Hicks got hold of the negatives and contacted me, I got scared. This was getting out of control.
There's something you don't seem to understand. Steelgrave knew that whoever was behind those photographs wanted money. A lot of money. He knew that sooner or later the blackmailer would have to show himself. That's what Steelgrave was waiting for.
He killed my brother. He told me so himself. The gangster showed through then, all right. It had started showing through for some time. Funny people you meet in Hollywood, don't you? Including me.
You were fond of him once.
Before I knew what he was and what he'd done. I'm not fond of anybody now. I'm all through with being fond of people.
It's gonna cost a lot of money to fix this.
I don't have a lot of money, so that's out.
So what about the studio? You're doing well, and you're worth money to them.
An up-and-coming movie star shoots her gangster boyfriend dead? The studio boss wouldn't chance a cover-up. He'll take his loss and forget it in 6 months.
You won't even try?
If I got in a jam and hadn't really done anything, yes. But I've done something now.
And your agent?
The same.
So that puts it up to me. That's why you sent for me.
Wonderful. You fix it, darling, for free. Believe me, I'm not worth it. Not even to sleep with.
Tell me why you had the gun with you.
The gun?
Don't take time to think. Just tell me. Did you mean to kill him?
Why not? I thought I meant something to him. I guess I'm a little vain. He fooled me. Nobody means anything to the Steelgraves of this world. And nobody means anything to the Mavis Welds of this world anymore.
Yeah, so you keep saying.
I oughtn't to have given you that gun. If I killed you, I might get clear yet.
Do you want me to give you the gun back?
Oh, this is crazy. I guess I don't like the script. I don't like the lines. It just isn't me, if you know what I mean.
That's just what I've been thinking. You're a good actress. So why are you giving such a bad performance?
Am I?
There's too much real emotion floating around. Were you really here with him alone?
That's what I told you.
That doesn't mean I have to believe you.
Why shouldn't you believe me?
Because I don't think you shot him. Okay, this is your gun. But that doesn't mean somebody else didn't fire it. After all, the door was open. Maybe somebody just left.
I'm tired of this. Let's call the police.
And tell them what?
Tell them that I shot Steelgrave. Tell them anything.
Why are you giving up now? You hadn't given up when you telephoned Dolores. By the way, was Steelgrave still alive when you phoned her?
Why does it matter?
I just wondered what sort of problem you expected me to help you solve.
We've had a nice chat. The phone's over there at the end of the bar.
You have your car here?
Yes.
Get going.
And do what?
Just go home, that's all.
You can't get away with it.
Don't tell me what I can't get away with. And don't ask why I'm doing this.
I can't let you. I killed him. Why should you be dragged into it?
Don't stall.
And when you leave, go the back way, not the way Dolores brought me.
But I killed him.
I can't hear a word you're saying.
But...
if you want a motive for me, then let's say it has nothing to do with you. I owe it to the cops. I haven't played clean cards in this game. They know. I know. I'm just giving them a chance to use the loud pedal.
As if anyone ever had to give them that.
You're still here.
I ought to thank you.
You asked me here.
Yes, but...
I'm a knight errant. You're a damsel in distress. Is that corny enough? The police are gonna be on my back whatever happens. I've nothing to lose. You have. Now go.
Very well. And thank you.
After a time, I hear a whirring noise. The garage door going up. Then a car is starting. The motor fades away into the distance. I hear nothing now. I go back to Steelgrave. He looks as if he plans to stay dead. I take the gun Mavis has given me and wipe it off. I put his small, limp hand around the butt and let it go. The gun thuds to the carpet. The position looks natural. I'm not thinking about fingerprints. He would have learned long ago not to leave them on any gun, even the one he kills himself with. The weapon in Steelgrave's holster, I take out and then put it on the bar shelf under the counter, wrapped in a towel. Then I touch the big muscle in the side of his neck, usually the first to harden. There's not a hell of a lot of time to play around with. I go to the telephone and dial the number of the Los Angeles Police Department. I tell them I'm here alone with Mr. Steelgrave, but unfortunately Mr. Steelgrave can't come to the phone right now. And this time, I promise to wait till they get here. How long do flies live? It's a while since I've been here, so chances are this is a new one. Well, for the moment, he can live. After all, it's good to be back in what passes for home. The cops still don't like me. They threaten me. They say they'd take my license away. But they can't actually prove Steelgrave didn't kill himself. And there are cops somewhere who'd hate to have to admit they'd known all along Steelgrave was Weepy Moyer. Worse, that they let him out of jail on the day his former partner in crime was shot dead. See? The fly's even settling down. The studio stood by Mavis Weld. Why not? She's a rising star. And what had she done wrong except make a mistake in her choice of boyfriend? They hired a smart, expensive lawyer, and the district attorney decided there was no case to answer. He apparently said he didn't believe in seeking publicity at the expense of people to whom a certain kind of publicity would be fatal. Doesn't he just love Hollywood? So if everyone was keeping quiet about her, they were going to have to keep quiet about me. Dr. Lagardi is still missing. Dolores hasn't phoned me since she found a new boyfriend, or several. It's just me and my fly. And the one person I haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah.
Phone booth. If you're alone, I'm coming up.
Uh-huh.
I suppose you're mad at me.
I'm not mad at anybody. Just tired.
Oh, yes, you are. But I don't care. I'm coming up anyway.
It's me. I'm going home.
Would that be Manhattan, Kansas?
I may have to come back, of course.
Can you afford it?
Why not?
I can't remember whether I gave you back your $20 or not. We kept passing it back and forth until I lost count.
Oh, you gave it back to me? Thank you.
You sure?
I never make mistakes about money.
She places her big square bag on my desk. The bag she carried the first morning, along with her glasses and the prim little narrow-minded smile.
Are you all right? Did they hurt you?
The police? No. And it was as tough a job as they ever didn't do.
You must be awfully brave.
Huh, just luck. After all, I'm not used to having my client ratting on me.
I pick up a pencil and feel the point. It's a good sharp point, if anybody wanted to write anything. I don't. I reach across and slip the pencil through the strap of her bag and pull it towards me.
Don't touch my bag!
But it's such a cute little bag. So like you.
You think I'm cute, Philip? I'm so ordinary.
I wouldn't say so.
You wouldn't?
Hell no. I think you're one of the most unusual girls I ever met.
I swing the bag by its strap and set it down on a corner of the desk, on my side.
I bet you've known lots of girls. Why didn't you ever get married?
The ones I'd like to marry, well, I haven't got what they need. The others you don't have to marry, you just seduce them, if they don't beat you to it.
Oh, you're horrid when you talk like that.
You wouldn't have been so hard to take yourself.
Don't talk like that, please.
Well, would you?
Oh, I wish you'd tell me what happened to Oren before he died. I'm all confused.
I told you. You probably went off the rails. The first time you came in, remember? Abnormal family life. An awful money hunger running through the whole family. Apart from one. So tell me. Was your father married before?
Yes. Why?
That helps. Leela had another mother. She's just your half-sister. That suits me fine. Tell me some more. After all, I did a lot of work for you for a very low fee of no dollars net. Why didn't you tell me who Mavis really was?
I was ashamed. Mother and I were both ashamed.
Oren wasn't. He loved it. Being in pictures isn't that bad, surely.
It wasn't just that.
How did Oren find out something about Steelgrave that the cops didn't know?
I don't know. Could it have been that Dr. Lagardi?
Oh, sure. He and Oren got to be friends somehow. A common interest in sharp tools, maybe.
Now you're just being nasty.
Such a pity. I'd be a lovable character if I'd let myself alone. Nice bag.
You let my bag alone!
You want to go home to Manhattan, Kansas, don't you? Today? You got your ticket and everything?
Don't you dare!
I'm not stopping you. I just wondered how much dough you squeezed out of the deal.
You're horrible!
There's a zipper pocket at the back of the bag. There's a flat pack of new bills in there.
10 centuries. All new. And even $1,000. Nice traveling money.
Leela gave the money to me.
What size chisel did you use?
You're awful.
Skip it. I guess you and Oren belong to that class of people that can convince themselves that everything they do is right. He can blackmail his sister, and then when a couple of small-time guys get in his way, he can sneak up on them and knock them off with an ice pick in the back of the neck. Probably didn't even keep them awake that night. You can do much the same. Your sister didn't give you that money. Steelgrave gave it to you. For what?
You're filthy. You're vile. How dare you say such things
to
me?
Who tipped off the law that Dr. Lagardi knew Clausen? Lagardi thought I did. I didn't. So you did. Why? To smoke out your brother, who was not cutting you in on a blackmail racket. Because right then, Hicks had stolen his deck of cards, and Oren was hiding out with a good doctor. I'd like to see some of those letters Oren wrote home. I can see him working on it, watching his famous half-sister, trying to get her lined up for his Leica.
Oren never mentioned any names. I didn't even know Oren had lost his negatives, but I knew they were very valuable. I came out to make sure.
Sure what?
That Oren treated me right. He could be awfully mean sometimes. He might have kept all that money for himself.
So why did he finally call you up?
He was scared. Dr. Lagardi wasn't pleased with him anymore. He didn't have the negatives. Somebody else had them. Oren didn't know who. But he was scared.
I had them. Oh. I still do. They're in my safe. How much are they worth? How about splitting that gram with me?
I never thought you were a crook. Anyway, I couldn't give you this money. I really couldn't. Well, Mother and I owe money still on account, and the house isn't clear.
What did you sell Steelgrave for that grand? You had one thing to sell. You knew where Oren was.
To Steelgrave, that information was worth a grand. Steelgrave went down there and shot him. He paid you the money for the address.
Leela told him!
She's a sort of free and easy Hollywood babe who doesn't have very good morals. But when it comes to bedrock guts, she has what it takes. She's not the ice pick type. And she's not the blood money type.
How dare you!
Yeah, blood money, your own brother. And you set him up so they could kill him. $1,000 blood money. One thing I regret. Not seeing your meeting back in Manhattan, Kansas with dear old mom. Not seeing the fight over how to split that grand. I bet that'd be something to watch.
And who are you? A cheap shyster, a nobody. Why, even $20 buys you. I could tell the police you've been suppressing evidence. They'd believe me.
And I could tell them who shot Steelgrave, because I know who didn't.
What do you mean?
Your sister told me she did it. She was prepared to tell the world that she'd killed him, but she hadn't.
How do you know?
Because you shot him. You're the only person in the world who could make her feel bad enough about herself to agree to take the rap. All the guilt you could put on her about your straitened circumstances and your grief over Aaron's death.
Steelgrave was a vile man.
No question of that.
He said horrible things to me, just like you say horrible things to me.
My comments can't have been in the same league.
I think he thought it was funny. He invited me to that house of his, then he gave me a billfold wrapped in a cloth of some kind. When I unwrapped it, there was a hole in the middle, and the hole was stained with blood. I felt sick.
No one likes to be reminded of what they're responsible for.
Then he gave me a pile of fresh notes. He thought that was the end, but...
But?
My sister arrived. She saw what had happened. She took out her gun.
To defend you.
I don't know, maybe.
That's my guess.
But I was so mad and so upset. I grabbed the gun from her and... I
plugged Mr. Steelgrave through his double-breasted suit.
He'd killed Oren.
And then you persuaded Big Sister to take the rap.
She owed it to us.
Owed it? Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Who are you going to tell?
Nobody. Because your sister's in the clear. And who needs all the publicity? It'd cost her too much. Unless you want the publicity. Besides, what evidence do I have?
You're saying I'm a murderess.
Aren't you?
You just don't understand anything.
I'd agree with that.
He was a horrible man, a killer, and he laughed at me.
Sure.
I think I'm going to go now.
I think you should.
I regret ever walking into your office.
The feeling's mutual.
I'm not surprised nobody ever married you.
The play is over. I'm sitting in the empty theater. Some of the actors are getting vague and unreal. I think of the little sister tripping back to Manhattan, Kansas, and dear old mom with that fat little new little $1,000 in her purse. A few people had been killed so she could get it, but I don't think that'll bother her for long. Then I think of Dr. Zugsmith, her employer back home, and I frame some advice. If that little girl wants anything from you, Dr. Zugsmith, give it to her quick. Just wrap yourself in a smile and shell out. Don't get involved in any discussions about what belongs to who. Just keep the little girl happy. That's the main thing. Good luck to you, Doctor. And don't leave any harpoons lying around the office. Sorry, Fly. Wrong moment.
In The Little Sister by Raymond Chandler, dramatized by Stephen Wyatt, Philip Marlowe was played by Toby Stevens, Orpha May by Kelly Burke, and Mavis by Fenella Woolgar. Lagardi was played by John Garasio, Dolores by Janita Jimenez, Hicks by Jonathan Forbes, and Clausen by Peter Policarpu. The director was Claire Grove.
And the classic Chandler series continues next week with Poodle Springs.
Also in the coming week here on Radio 4, Marcus Brigstock boldly demands that his guests do something they've never tried before. In the past, he's persuaded John Culshaw to eat a salad and Kate Adie to go to bingo. This time round, among his achievements, is persuading reluctant cook and breakfast cereal fan Ian Hislop to bake a cake. The new series of I've Never Seen Star Wars begins on BBC Radio 4 on Wednesday evening at 6:30. Back to today, and after the news, Jane Garvey picks some highlights from the Women's Hour Week for Weekend Women's Hour.